Okay, good evening, everyone. This week's parasha is Parashas Vayechi, Tavshin Pei. Okay, and we will start from the beginning, page 268. Perek Mem Zayin Pasuk Chav Ches, chapter 47, verse 28. Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvayas Reishana. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt for 17 years. Vayechi Yemei Yaakov Shnei Chayav. And the days of the years of Yaakov's life were Sheva Shanim Barboim Ma'ashana, 147 years. So the very first Rashi states, Lama Parsha Zu Stuma. If you look in the Sefer Torah, you will see the end of Parshas Vayigash and the beginning of Parshas Vayechi are different than the end and the beginning of other Parshias, where typically between the end of a Parsha, the beginning of a new Parsha, there is a space. You can say for Torah, there's a space in between. You've got the writing, a space of a couple of letters, and then a new parasha starts. Vayechi starts immediately at the end of Vayigash. There is no space in between. There's no open space in between. So Rashi says, "Lama parasha zu stuma? Why is this parasha stuma? Why is it closed? There's no opening." Lefi shekeva shenifta Yaakov Avinu, because once Yaakov passed away, nistibu einayim v'libam shel Yisrael. The hearts and the eyes of the Jewish people became closed up. Their eyes became dimmed. Their hearts became closed. Mitzaras Hashibud, from the distress and the suffering of the enslavement that was coming. So the being closed is meant to, which is called stuma, it's closed up, that is meant to allude to the idea of a stima, a closing up, amongst the Jewish people because of the fact that Yaakov was about to die. Davar acher, shabikesh lagaloitzas haketz labana v'nista mimenu. Yaakov wanted to reveal the end of time, the coming of Mashiach, when Mashiach has to come. He wanted to let his children know when Mashiach will come. V'nista mimenu, and that was closed up from him. He knew it, he wanted to reveal it, and then God closed it up. He closed up that piece of information from him. He couldn't relate it. So the stima, the closing between the last week's parasha and this week's parasha, mean to allude to a closing up either of the closing up of the eyes and the hearts of the Jewish people from the suffering of the enslavement that was coming with the death of Yaakov, or it means that Yaakov had at one time was open to certain knowledge, to certain information, which is when Mashiach will eventually come, and that was closed up from him, that was taken away from him. So the Kli Yakar has a very interesting elaboration on this Rashi in showing where exactly do these explanations of Rashi, how do they exactly fit into this setup of the fact that there is no break between the end of last week's parasha and the beginning of this week's parasha. And he writes like this, Ashanir li bazeh, what appears to me is, l'fish metzinu kan stima shlo kederach ha-parshias ha-stuma shabbatayrah. As we said before, there is no space in between then last week's parsha, this week's parsha, which is typically what we find. And therefore, the one who decided the break of the parshias was Ezra HaSefer. Ezra was the one who divided the Torah in parshias. The fact that he divided up the parshias, but he had the end of last week's parsha and this week's parsha right next to each other, one leading into the other, what he was trying to do was, he was trying to tell you, don't read them separately. They're not separate. They run together. One connects to the other. That's how you have to see it. Yes, it's two parashias, but the fact that they literally lead one into the other, you know, if you look inside the Sefer Torah, you have to really look to find Vayechi because there is no break to be able to see it clearly. That is meant to say they are together. Look at them together. One leads into the other. Okay, so he explains, according to the first explanation of Rashi, that once Yaakov died, that is when the enslavement began, and that closed up the hearts and the minds of the Jewish people. The connection between the two psukim is the following. Now take a look. Turn back a page to page 266 to the very last verse of very last pasuk of Parashas Vayigash. There it says, Vayeshev Yisrael Beretz Mitzrayim Beretz Goshen. And Israel settled in the land of Mitzrayim, land of Goshen. Vayachazuba, they acquired property in it. Vayifru vayirbu ma'ed, and they were fruitful and multiplied greatly. That's the last pasuk. And then you have to read, and right after that, you read, and Yaakov lived in Egypt 17 years. The connection between the two is the following. That which we say that the Jewish people took hold of land in Egypt, and they were fruitful, they multiplied in Egypt, that only held true as long as Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shva Esrei Shana. As long as Yaakov was alive for those 17 years, the Jewish people settled in the land, they took hold of the land, they multiplied in the land. That is when it happened. But once Yaakov died, and once the Jewish people's eyes and hearts became closed up from the Tsar of the Shibud, what that meant was that everything that they had gained until now, they lost. They took hold of the land. They became slaves. They couldn't really be owners of the land. They were fruitful and they multiplied. Well, we know that the Egyptians actually worked hard to stop that. Miracles happened that they still multiplied, but the Egyptians tried to stop that by enslaving them. So the point is that according to the first pshat, that the stima, the Rashi cites a medrash, that the stima says their hearts and minds became closed because of the shibud, that lies in these two psukim leading one into the other by basically saying, Parsha Yigash says the Jewish people settled, took hold of the land, were fruitful. The next pasuk says Yaakov 17 years. Those two things go together. As long as Yaakov is alive, they were settled and they were free. Once Yaakov died, everything changed. That's when things, their hearts and minds became closed up. That's when they lost whatever they had until now, because with Yaakov's death, the enslavement started. So that's how the Kli Yakar shows the first pshat of Rashi, how it lies. It doesn't just lie in the fact that there's no break, that it's closed up. It lies in the fact that no break says, read them together. One goes with the other. And one goes with the other means, as Rashi says, as long as Yaakov is alive, the Jewish people are settled, they live in the land, they prosper in the land. But after Yaakov goes, then that all ends because the Shibud was beginning, because the enslavement was beginning. That's according to the first pshat that Rashi brings down. You look at the second pshat in Rashi, which is that Yaakov wanted to reveal the Then he brings another explanation. Then he also says that you could also take the same idea that the last pasuk and the first pasuk are dependent on each other. They work together, but they work together in the following way. Shatzcholas HaShibud, that the fact that the enslavement had to start, Hayasibas Misasai, that's what caused Yaakov to die. Kikitzar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shinoisav, God shortened Yaakov's years, Shalahigia Limei Avaisav, that he didn't live as long as his forefathers, right? As his fathers. Yaakov lived to be 147. Avram was 175. Yitzchak was 180. Why did Yaakov die at 147? Shayira b'shibud banav. Because it was time for the enslavement to begin. Hashem knew it was time to begin. And so Yaakov shouldn't have to see it, he died. Kibazman shal v'avodah v'inu oisam. Because the time for the fulfillment of the bris min habasarim, that they will enslave them and inflict pain upon them, it was time for that to start. This is why it says in the next pasuk, Pasuk Chavtes, Vayikru Yimei Yisrael Amos, and the days of Yisrael came close to dying. So Medrash says, Komishan Rabbi Kreva, anybody who the Torah says that his days became close to dying, Lagila Mei Avaisav, that means he did not reach to live as long as his fathers. And now the connection is the same. Meaning, what he's trying to say according to this, to another approach, about the connection between the first way of explaining the connection between the last pasuk and the last pasuk of last week's parsha and the first pasuk of this parsha, is to say that the success of the Jewish people in Egypt was as long as Yaakov lived. And that was because of the fact that, again, it was in Yaakov's merit. It was in Yaakov's merit that they prospered. It was all because of Yaakov's merit. Once his merit wasn't there, the enslavement started, and the Jewish people lost whatever they had gained. According to this explanation, he's trying to say that that the reason why Yaakov died, meaning the first explanation is, since Yaakov died, now the enslavement starts. According to the next explanation, he wants to say that why does Yaakov die? Because enslavement needs to start. It's time for the enslavement to start. Hashem doesn't want Yaakov to have to see the enslavement. Very similar to what we find by Avram Avinu. Rashi brings down Avram died at 175 so as not to see Esav stray from the proper path and become evil and to sin. Similarly, we're saying here, Yaakov's life was shortened so he shouldn't have to see the enslavement of his children. So again, the first pasuk says the Jewish people were settled and they were fruitful, they took hold of the land, which means they weren't enslaved. That again was only as long as Yaakov was alive. But once Yaakov died, that wasn't going to happen anymore. And why did Yaakov die at this point? Because it's time for the enslavement to start. So it's not, the first way was that the Jewish people, it's almost like saying the Jewish people should have been enslaved right away. But in the merit of Yaakov, they weren't. According to the second explanation, the Jewish people weren't enslaved because it wasn't time to be enslaved. But once it did become time to be enslaved, that's when Yaakov's life would end. So again, the two things work together, they're coming from different angles.
But the number don't quite add up.
What do you mean?
Well, the new pharaoh showed up like in two generations.
Excuse me?
The new pharaoh, who was the mean one, came, like, I assume, like 50 years at least after Yaakov died.
I don't know the calculations, but whatever the calculations are, the point is, no, is that all these are going to...
It happened after...
But that's a question in general. What does it mean that once Yaakov died, the enslavement started? Yeah. We know that the enslavement didn't start until the whole first generation died.
Right.
So that's a separate question.
Okay.
That's not a question on this point. That's a separate question. What does it mean that with Yaakov's death, the Shebet started? We know that it only happened until the whole first generation. Right. So some say, you're right, the full-fledged enslavement didn't start until the first generation, died, but things began already getting... Things started changing once Yaakov died. Maybe not a full enslavement, but things started changing. They weren't holding the same status that they had before.
Okay. Because Joseph died like 120-something.
So yeah. 110. But again, they asked this question. What does it mean with Yaakov's death, the enslavement began? We know that the same thing didn't start until all his children died. The whole generation had to die first. So one answer is, you're right, the full-fledged enslavement only started then. But things already started, they saw things were changing. Okay. Now, so that is how the Kliyakar works with the first explanation of Rashi, that the stima, that the closing up, means to say that their eyes and their hearts became closed up from the enslavement. Then he says, regarding the other explanation, okay, the other explanation is the following, and that was that the closing up is a sign of how Yaakov wanted to reveal the end when Mashiach would come, and that was closed up from him. Now, what happened exactly there? And the answer is, Yaakov wanted to reveal the end of time when Mashiach would come. Mashiach is going to come. And the Shechina left him. The Shechina that rested on him left him, and therefore he didn't know it anymore. And according to this explanation, what's happening is Vishabala Tirates Mahu Sha'amar, according to this explanation, we have to answer the following question. It says, Vayachiya Koy Beretz Mitzrayim Shva Asrei Shana. Yaakov lived in Egypt for 17 years. So the question is, what do those words come to teach us? Without the Torah telling us he was there for 17 years, we could figure it out. Shaharei b'voi lefnei paroi, oim omar, in last week's parasha, when Yosef brought him before Paro, when Yaakov arrived, Yaakov said, Yemei migurai kuflam et shana. He told Paro, I'm 130 years. Okay. Vimkei lamutzrach lemeshoi b'mitzrachai mitzrami zayin shana. Why does it have to tell us he lived 17 years? When he comes to Egypt, we know he's 130. When he dies, he's 147. So you figure it out. You'll figure it out. He was there for 17 years. What's the purpose of the Torah telling us he was there for 17 years? Elavadai, rather, Shabalahoi Shapirsha Shechina Mimenu. The Torah is trying to bring out the idea by saying that he lived for 17 years to show us that the Shechina left him. When Yosef's brothers told Yaakov that Yosef was alive, and he was convinced that Yosef was alive, what does the pasuk say? Vatachi ruach Yaakov aviyem. And the spirit of Yaakov, their father, came alive. What does that mean? The spirit of Yaakov came alive. Sheperusha, the meaning of that is Shashar Sa'alav Ashchina. The Shechina began to rest on Yaakov again. As long as Yaakov was in mourning, the Shechina did not rest on him. Once he came out of that state of mourning, his spirit became alive. The Shechina rested on him once again. Medikama Ruach Yaakov. That lies in the words Ruach Yaakov. The spirit of Yaakov came alive. That means the Shechina came back. So you might think, Shashar Salav Ruach HaKadosh, that the spirit of holiness rested on him. It rested on him until he died. Kamash Malan, the first words of the parasha come to teach you. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt. Once he reached Mitzrayim, Chai Yaakov. Yaakov was alive. Avoloi Ruach Yaakov. But no more the spirit of Yaakov. Immediately upon coming to Egypt, the Shechina left him. Because Yaakov said when he met Yosef, Amusa hapam, I will die this time. I can die now, basically. After I see your face. So when Yaakov said to Yosef, I see your face, I can go. Vimkein miyad hayamuchan el hatzavah letzavais machmas misa. And therefore, really, if he's ready to die, Yaakov is ready to live. Leave his final will. So Hashem was afraid that he would reveal the end of time. He would reveal when Mashiach would come. Okay, Nistak Mena Ashchina, and therefore the Ashchina left him. So what's happening right now is, says according to the Kli Yakar, is that Yaakov lived for 17 years. Means to say, Yaakov lived. It was only Yaakov living for 17 years. And beforehand, once Yosef came, the spirit of Yaakov came alive, and the Shechina rested upon him. But once he came to Mitzrayim, Yaakov in the land of Egypt, 17 years, the point of that means to say that for the last 17 years of his life, that Shechina that came back to him, once he realized that Yosef was alive and he stopped mourning over Yosef, that left him for the last 17 years of his life. Because the pasuk says, Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov lived. Before it said the spirit of Yaakov was alive. And now it just talks about Yaakov. That means to say there's a difference between the spirit of Yaakov being alive and Yaakov being alive. We'll get there, okay? But right now the point is that the first step of this explanation of Rashi, where Rashi says that Yaakov, that the steam of the closing up means to bring out the idea that this information that Yaakov wanted to reveal was closed up. What the first point that has to be dealt with is, why does the Torah tell us he lived for 17 years? If it just wants to tell us he lived 17 years, you can figure that out. But the point is to say that for the last 17 years, it was just Yaakov living. But that spirit of Yaakov that came alive wasn't there anymore. Because once he came to Mitzrayim, there already was the possibility that he would leave his final will, and that included in that would be letting his children know when Mashiach would ultimately come. Therefore, Hashem, in order to do that, he had to have Ruach HaKodesh, the spirit of holiness, resting upon him. Hashem took that away from him, so he shouldn't reveal. Now the only question is, and what's wrong with him revealing the when Sheikh is going to come? Al kain ba parshazu stuma. Therefore, we have this closing up. We have this closing. No space between the end of last week's parsha and this week's parsha. To the pasuk vayesh v'yisrael b'eretz goshen. And therefore we have this connection between last week's parsha, then last week's parsha, the last pasuk of and Yisrael lived in Goshen, and Vayechi Yaakov. Says the Kli Yakar, there is a lot of damage that can come from knowing when Mashiach is going to come. Because the earlier generations who know that Mashiach isn't destined to come during their time, they don't bother asking Hashem to bring Mashiach earlier. See, there's no question that there's two ways Mashiach to come. Mashiach can come. There's a point of time Mashiach will have to come. That we know. But there's also the ability that we have to bring Mashiach earlier. If we do the proper tshuva, Mashiach can come earlier. If we ask, we daven to Hashem, and we do tshuva, Mashiach can come earlier. But if you know when Mashiach's ultimately going to come, right? In this year, he's going to come. So you're just that the idea of saying, yeah, but I want him to come earlier. It becomes much harder. Because you hear that, well, he's not coming now, right? He'll come then, but he won't come now. So it becomes distant to you. He's not going to come now. So if he's not going to come now, so we'll kind of settle down. We'll live life the way life is right now, and eventually he'll make it here. It deters you if you know that there's a point where he has to come. The Kli Yakar is saying it deters you. It kind of takes you away from asking it to come earlier.
So how come Yaakov didn't understand that?
So Yaakov thought that he would actually make the wait easier. Yaakov thought that he seemed to have thought that his descendants would be able to deal with both. And that they would, of course, try to get it to come earlier. But it would be easy. The wait would be easier, knowing that when it's going to come, when there's a light, when you see the light at the end of the tunnel, it's easier. And the Kli Yakar says it actually can have a boomerang effect. It could actually create an effect where you say, well, he's coming then. He's not really going to come now.
Well, Yaakov sees in front of him this period, a difficult period when they're going to be slaves.
Where does it say that?
No, but why he wants to reveal the challenges?
Because he knows that. He's looking, talking about Mashiach. I mean, Yaakov knows the same tradition that Avraham Avinu has, right? There's going to be a lot of Galusim.
Right. But so he wants to give them some sort of chizuk for them.
He wants to give them a chizuk. He wants to make it easier for them to wait.
Yaakov leaves after we already have a lot of experience with that.
Okay.
So he more experience than Yaakov. What effect at all?
I'm not following what you're saying. I'm not following you. What are you trying to
say? Kliyakers, we now know how Galut affects us.
Yeah, but we don't know the end.
Yeah, so
we don't
know that if you tell him that, in that year it will come, okay, then I will sit down and do nothing. Yaakov can't imagine that.
What kind of Jew would do? Yaakov would actually think that it's a good idea to reveal the day.
Yaakov is more optimistic about Jewish nature in the
because
it never happened before. He only can imagine that. He never saw Jews in slavery. We did.
He was trying to alleviate the experience of the Jews.
Well, this what we said. He was trying to alleviate it.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but
Kli Yakar already sees Jews.
It's not the Kli Yakar. But Kli Yakar is saying Hashem already right then and there.
Right, but Kli Yakar already saw how Jews behave.
I would say that the fact that I would say that Yaakov got the message, and Hashem took it away from him. Once Hashem took it away from him, and Yaakov saw that Hashem doesn't want him to reveal it anymore, Yaakov gets the picture that this. I guess this is not a good idea. So it's an interesting idea. I'm not sure if I fully comprehend this argument. If you know when the end is going to come, you're not going to try to get it to come earlier. I hear it, but I don't understand it 100%.
So how is it different from just knowing it will come at some time?
Yeah, I mean the point is if I don't know where the end is, if I don't know where the end is, then okay, I'll hope. I'm going to keep hoping for him to come because I don't know when he's going to come. But if I do know when he's going to come, but I know he can come earlier, but I do know when he's going to come, so then I'm not. I mean, it's got to be that the whole idea has to be that it's not like they have no idea they can bring him earlier. They know he can bring him earlier. But if you know when eventually he's going to come, so then you're not going to try as hard. I guess if you know, because I guess, look, it's hard to wait either way. It's hard to wait either way, and it's hard to work towards bringing Mashiach earlier, especially if you don't know what it means to have Mashiach. So if it's something that you have no idea when it's going to come, okay, let's let it come. But you know when it's going to come. You know it's going to come exactly when it's going to come. So you just get kind of deterred from dealing with the unknown. You know, let the unknown come whenever the unknown comes. It's like a psychological reaction. What do you want to say?
Yes, so it's good to motivate people to do something good.
Right.
So in this case, we are motivated to do something so Mashiach will come early.
Right.
So that's exactly, so keep us in suspense.
But if you're not in suspense and you know he can come earlier, like, why wouldn't you want him to come earlier? It's not like they don't know they can bring him earlier. It seems like they're just not going to bother. Not going to bother with it. Because, I'll give you an example. I'll show you that from the example that he brings. Because he says, so now, how is this connected to the previous pasuk? Right? What's the connection to the end of last week's parsha? So the Kli Yarkos says, because when we read this pasuk at the end of last week's parsha, Yisrael lived land of Mitzrayim, and they took hold of it, and they were fruitful and they multiplied, is this pasuk telling us something positive about the Jewish people or not positive about the Jewish people? So the Kli Yarkos says, and I believe Rav Hirsch also says, that this pasuk is not necessarily, you know, it clearly talks, if there's a positive, yeah, sure, they lived and they multiplied, that's good. But the idea that they settled and they took hold of land actually can be interpreted to say that the Jewish people started getting a little too comfortable in Egypt. They started settling in it too much. And he wants to say, according to his whole idea, that you know why they got so settled? You know why this generation got so settled? Because this generation, he says, I'm not sure what he bases it on, but he says, this generation, oh, I'm sorry if I care, you're right, thank you. This generation knows when Mitzrayim is supposed to end. Everybody knows when it's supposed to end, right? 400 years, right? So, good, there was a question. The question is, how do you calculate it exactly? But he wants to say, look, Avraham was told, after 400 years, it's going to end, right? So, they know there's an end. Oh, so there is an end. So they're not going to work. They're not so into trying to get it. So they think, oh, he's going to come then. He's already going to come then anyway. All right. So we settle in. So the whole, so it comes out that the way he explains, by Chi Yaakov, Shvaz Reishana, Yaakov 17 years. Yaakov lost his Ruach HaKadosh for the last 17 years of his life. You know why he did that? Because why did Hashem do that? Because seeing how the Jewish people reacted in Egypt, knowing when the end of the Egyptian slavery would come, what did they do? They decided to get very comfortable in Mitzrayim, and we'll just kind of hold out until it all ends. If that's how they acted in Egypt, then Hashem said, Mashiach, we're not letting that secret out of the bag. That secret's not getting out of the bag, because if it does, this problem is going to keep repeating itself. And says the Kli Yarkos, and this is where the Kli Yarkos writes about, this is not the first time he writes about it. And he says, you know, look at the way we are now. Look at the way we are now without knowing the end. What's our attitude about Golas? So he reads, Kasher b'avaneinu midazu metzuya b'eneinu. And this behavior is very common by us. Afilu b'zman she'ena keitz noida. Even without knowing when the end is going to come. Mikol kam rabim heima amei ha'aretz. So many people, Hamishyashim ba'aretz ha'amim, who settle in the land of the nations, ubaynim lehem batim svunim v'chashulim, and they build big fortified houses. V'shalavonim binyan akiyim, they make them out of stone. Make these are lasting houses. Ubesibazu lo'ilam enim darshinis b'nei Hashem b'cholev lavim el artzam. Once you get very settled, you're not going to ask with a full heart that Hashem should bring Mashiach and bring you back to Eretz Yisrael. If you see how things are happening now, Yisrael, where he says that's the idea. The idea is the last pasuk in last week's parsha, and Yisrael settled, is a criticism of the Jewish people. And it's a criticism that became too settled and too permanent in Egypt, because knowing when the end would come, they said, okay, whenever it comes. And until then, well, we'll wait it out. Without really seeking and wanting to have it come earlier. Or really seeking to get out. And therefore, based on that, Vayechi Yaakov, Yaakov lives 17 years without the Shechina. The Shechina leaves him. It leaves him so that he never will be able to reveal to the Jewish people when Mashiach will come, so that the problem that happened by the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, about not wanting the Geula to come earlier, becoming too settled, knowing when their end, when the end of their exile would come. Therefore, Hashem says, for generations, we don't need this problem. Let's not exasperate it. You're not going to know Mashiach comes, and that would be at least a greater motivator. The situation will be one that will promote waiting for Mashiach, waiting for Geula better. So that's how he learns, according to the second pshat of Rashi, how the fact that last week's parasha, this week's parasha are closed, it's leading one into the other, means to say one pasuk leads into the other. Read them together. Understand that they are one connects, one follows the other, and he shows according to both Pshatim and Rashi how it all fits in.
Do you think Mashiach could, looking back, could come before Hashem gave Torah?
I don't know about that, but the question really would be, I would change your question.
Okay.
And the question would be, when the Jewish people were enslaved, was it possible for them to get out earlier? Or does it just mean that knowing when they would get out, they just got too settled in? They just became too settled. And too settled meant that they become too assimilated, you know. Now, even, you know,
they did come out early.
Eventually, they still came out early because it, depending on how you count the 400 years. But the question is, so what do you say? You're saying there are other possibilities of getting out earlier also? You still got to have 400 years somewhere.
Yes.
And the best one is from the birth of Yitzchak. Yes. Okay, so your point is interesting, because in the comparison to the Egyptian slavery, he says, you know, they knew when the end was going to come, right? So they just got very settled. Now, you can ask a question, yeah, well, the difference between them and us is that we could bring it earlier, and they couldn't have brought it earlier. So they really had no motivation to do earlier. But it doesn't seem to be working like that. So I don't know if he means to say that there was a possibility of earlier, or it's just by saying that, just like over there, they knew the end. So when you know the end, you just kind of forget about everything else. You just get too settled in the meantime. Even when you know the possibility is going to happen, the same thing could happen if, again, you know when the end is going to come. Even if you have the possibility to bring it earlier, it'll be the same result.
So it's not like Hashem trusts with this information. He trusts Avram with that, right? He tells him the number. But our generations shouldn't trust so much.
But again, I don't know. But
Avram
say,
doesn't stop doing anything, right?
No, but Avram, no. But again, but there's no possibility of making it happen earlier.
No, well, Hashem tells Avram this 400 years. Avram doesn't sit down and start to, you know, change.
That is true. Yitzchak doesn't either. Yaakov doesn't either. But eventually, Yaakov's descendants do.
Right.
Eventually,
so
they do.
When you have a society, it's different.
As time goes on.
Yeah.
Okay, that was an interesting kliyaka. Very interesting approach. Very novel approach to things. All right, let's move on. Pasuk Chavtes. Vayikrevu Yemei Yisrael Lamus. The days of Yisrael came close to dying, which doesn't mean he got sick, right? That's something like he took a turn for the worse. It just means he felt that he was getting close to the point of dying. This is Patsach Chavtes, verse 29, page 268. Vayikra levnei leYosef, he called his son Yosef. Vayoyim eloi, he said to him, if I find favor in your eyes, simno yot chatach esirechi, place your hand under my thigh, vasis emali chesed ve'emes, and you shall do for me kindness and truth, anot sekbereni b'mitzrayim, do not bury me in Egypt. V'shachavti ema v'isai, I shall lie with my fathers, unesasarim b'mitzrayim, you'll carry me from Egypt, ukvartani b'kvurasam, bury me in their burial place. Vayomar, and Yosef says, anoichi esechid varecha, I shall do like your words. Vayomar, and Yaakov says, hishavali, swear to me. Vayishavaloi, and then Yosef swears. Vayishach Yisrael resha mita, and then Yisrael bowed at the head of the bed. Okay, So Yaakov wants to get out of Yosef a commitment that Yosef will bring him out of Egypt when he dies, be buried in Maaret Machpelah in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now, what's interesting is Yaakov says to Yosef two things: don't bury me in Egypt, take me from Egypt, bury me in their burial place. And if Yaakov would have left out the words "don't bury me in Egypt," he would have just said, "Take me out of Egypt, carry me from Egypt, and bury me with my fathers." He's not being buried in Egypt. So those words seem to be extra. Why does Yaakov have to say, "Don't bury me in Mitzrayim, but when I die, bring me out of Mitzrayim and bury me with my fathers"? Just say, "When I die, take me out of Mitzrayim and bury me with my fathers." Why this extra warning? "Don't bury me in Egypt," says the Sefernu. Afilu b'arin ki'inyan v'ayusim b'arin b'mitzrayim. Even when it says, "Do not bury me in Egypt," it means do not put me in a arun, do not put me in a coffin. As it says by Yosef, "Vayusem ba'arun b'mitzrayim." Yosef was put in a arun, in a casket in Egypt. Shem tasekein afilu l'sha, because if you do so, even only for a short period of time, they will not allow you to take me to the cave. Because I'll say, it's enough, as was the practice by them. So their practice seemed to have been, like we find by Yosef, that Yosef was put in a casket in Egypt. Okay? They buried them in caskets.
Okay, like, they could have ointments to keep the body.
That's something they used to embalm them. Okay, but besides that, he's saying they would
do.
But that's not the point here. The point here is he seems to be saying, don't even allow me to be temporarily buried like they do in Egypt. In Egypt, how do they bury you? They put you in a casket, in a vault, whatever words you want to use. Put you in a vault, and that's where they leave you. Yosef's vault they put in the water because they didn't want to find Yosef, but they put you in a vault, and that's where they leave you. Okay. And for some reason, it would have been Yaakov was concerned that may happen temporarily. So Al Nas Menu Mitzrayim means do not bury me at all in Egypt. No type of burial as done in Egypt should be done to me, even just temporarily, because then you'll never get me out of here. Because once I get buried in the manner that they bury. They're going to say, "That's enough. He's buried already. You don't need to shlep him to Eretz Yisrael. If you don't do anything, okay." So now you have more of a possibility to say he wants to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. But once he's already buried according to their terms, even if, again, Yosef says, but it was only meant to be temporary. Once he's buried according to the Egyptian practice, he'll never be able to get out. So the first thing is, do not bury me in Egypt. There is no burial in Egypt to be done whatsoever, even temporarily. And then, where should you bury me? In Eretz Yisrael, together with my fathers. Okay, so that's the first point here I want to mention. Now the next point is a very interesting point that has to do with the whole idea of the fact that Yaakov wanted to be buried in Mitzrayim, in Eretz Yisrael. And this really gives us an insight as to why people in general want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Right? There are people who want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rabbi Seinu, Shnei Dvarim B'Shem Rabbi Chelbai. Our sages said two things in the name of Rabbi Chelbai. This is the Medrash. Lama Ha'avais Mechavim Kuras Eretz Yisrael. Why did the forefathers desire to be buried in the land of Israel? Shemeis Eretz Yisrael Chayim Tchila B'Meis HaMashiach. V'eichlin Shneis HaMashiach. Number one, the dead of Eretz Yisrael will come alive first in the days of Mashiach, and they shall benefit. They shall eat, they shall benefit in the years of Mashiach. There's some kind of a concept here that says that Tchias HaMesim will happen to those buried in Israel first. It'll happen during the period of Mashiach, which means that they will actually be alive and experiencing the Mesa Mashiach, while those in Chutz La'aretz are going to have to wait for the final resurrection of the dead, which will be after the days of Mashiach are over. It'll be a whole different period of time, and that's a time when even those in Chutz La'aretz will come to life. But according to this opinion, you've got those in Eretz Yisrael coming back to life earlier. That's number one. Rabbi Chanina says, "Mi shemeis b'chutz la'aretz v'nikbar sham." If a person dies outside of Eretz Yisrael and is buried there, Shtei Mises Yesh B'Yadai, he actually goes through two types of death. The Medrash explains what the commentaries explain what these two deaths mean. I'm not sure what it means. It means that there's a point where the, of course, the neshama departs from the body, and then there is some other kind of thing that has to do with the remains. I didn't really understand it. But there's some other kind of concept of two deaths. And those two deaths take place if you're in Chutzlaret, if you die in Berneret in Chutzlaret, if you get Berneret Yisrael, you don't have to experience that. But now the focus of the Medrash is going to go back to the first explanation. The first explanation was that the reason why the Avos wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael is because those who die in Eretz Yisrael will come to life first, earlier. So on that, the Medrash says, Amar Rabbi Simon, Im kein ipsidu et tzadikim, shem kvorim b'chutz la'aretz. Then the tzadikim, the righteous that are buried in outside of Eretz Yisrael, they're going to lose out. That doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense that the tzaddikim who die in Chutz La'aretz are going to lose out and not be able to experience an earlier resurrection and experience today's the Mashiach. Ella, ma kadosh baruch hu aiseh, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? And I'm sure when I tell this to you, it's going to sound familiar to you. Aiseh len mechilas ba'aretz. What is Hashem going to do for the dead, or at least the tzaddikim in Chutz La'aretz, who are going to come to life earlier together with those in Eretz Yisrael? Ella, Aisel and Mechilais Ba'aretz, he's going to make these tunnels in the earth. Vais and Aisel and Kemaris Halolu, going to make them like these caves. They misgoggle in, and the bodies will kind of roll. Uboyim at Shehem Agin Eretz Yisrael, until they reach Eretz Yisrael. Like a Deshbaruch, and Aisel and Ruach, Shalchaim and Aimdim, and a Deshbaruch will bring them back to life. Meaning that how will those who are at least the Tzadikim and Chutz La'aretz, they're going to come to life, together with the people in Eretz Yisrael. How is that going to happen? That's going to happen that somehow or another, HaKadosh Baruch is going to form these tunnels. The remains of all those people in Chutz La'aretz will come through those tunnels to Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael will come back to life together with the dead in Eretz Yisrael. Now, this is something that perhaps you've heard of this, that the reason why people want to bury in Eretz Yisrael is because they don't have to go through this.
It sounds like the other way around.
Tzaddikim
don't have much to worry about. If you're not a
tzaddik,
then you have to worry about it.
Well,
it's
it would
you
no.
Be there.
What?
If you're not a tzaddik,
but
you will be better off in Israel, no?
What? Yeah. But the question is, if you're not a tzaddik and you're chutz la'aretz, what's going to happen to you?
Right.
So it's going to happen to you.
But to be there. But if you're a tzaddik, it's okay here.
No? If you're a tzaddik, he's saying that. And what about if you're not a tzaddik?
Right, that's a problem.
You're not going to get a tunnel? You're not going to have tchias amesim? I don't know if that's what it means. It could have just been saying that this idea that the Mesa Eretz Yisrael get up earlier than everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, what about the tzaddikim? Mm-hmm. Okay, the tzaddikim will get up earlier together with those in Eretz Yisrael mm-hmm. by these tunnels. Mm-hmm. And everybody else who's going to merit with tchias amesim we'll also have these tunnels, just at a later time. Okay? I mean, reading the Medrash, it only says it on the Tzaddikim, but it could only be saying it on the Tzaddikim so they don't lose out. Mm-hmm. But not to say that, but what's going to happen to everybody else? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, the way you always hear this idea is in general, right? Anybody, the Tchias HaMesim outside of Eretz Yisrael, you're going to have to go through these tunnels. It's a painful thing for the neshama to have to go for its body to have to go through that, and therefore, to avoid that, you get buried in Eretz Yisrael. Yes, the way the Medrash talks about it seems it's going on the tzaddikim. It doesn't talk about it in a general sense. It doesn't talk about the suffering. It just talks about earlier or later. That is true. I'm assuming, right, that what we've heard in a general sense, the same idea is going to be, just it's going to happen at a later time. Okay, now. Now here's an interesting part. Meiser Belezer, Rabbi Meiser Barabi, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Bida Anasi, Rabbi Elazar, Shoyimahochem ba Pili Shchutz Tveria. They were walking in a place called Pili outside of Tveria. Ro Arin Shalmeis Shabam Mechutz LaAretz. They saw a dead person who came from outside of Eretz Yisrael to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. They saw the Arin, the coffin, the casket. Omar Rabbi Rebelezer. So Rabbi says Rebelezer, Mahayol Zeh, Shiatza Nishmasa Bechutzala Aretz, Sebali Kabaretz Yisrael. What is this person helping? What's he helping? that his neshama left in Chutz La'aretz, and now he comes to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. What's he doing here? Ani karei alav, I call on him, v'nachalasi samtem l'say eva, you place my inheritance as an abomination. Bechayechem, that you did in your lifetime, by not living here. V'tavayu v'tatamus arzi, and then you came and contaminated my land, v'misaschem, in your death. So Rebbe says, you didn't live here when you were alive. That's one problem, right? And now you come to Eretz Yisrael and bring more tumah, because a dead body carries tumah. So, like, you didn't live here, and then you come and you bring your tumah to Eretz Yisrael. That means Rebbe was not. Rebbe seemed very troubled by this practice. Amaloi. So Rebbe Lezer said to him, "Kevushu nikva Eretz Yisrael." Once he's buried in the land of Israel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu machabalai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives him.
What?
HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives him. Meaning, at least, I guess, it forgives him for not living in Eretz Yisrael. But whatever it is, Rebbe says, what's he doing? What does Rebbe Lezer say? Look, he gets a kapara. He gets an atonement. It's worth it for that. It's worth it for that. But Rebbe had a problem. Rebbe had a problem. You're not living here, that's one problem. And then you bring tumah. And the answer is, it would seem to me the answer is, you have a point. But at the end of the day, by being buried in Eretz Yisrael, you gain some kind of atonement. I don't mean it's atonement for not living in Eretz Yisrael, a general atonement, but there's some kind of kapara that comes to being buried in Eretz Yisrael, which is clearly another reason why people want to bury in Eretz Yisrael. Now, to conclude, the commentary of Etz Yosef brings a question from the Zohar. Rebbe said that Rebbe had a problem that you're coming to Eretz Yisrael to be buried and you're bringing tumah. So Rebbe wasn't happy with that, right? So the Zohar asks, and what about Yaakov and Yosef? They died outside of Eretz Yisrael and they asked to be brought in. So according to Rebbe, what about the problem of bringing tumah?
They did live before.
Yeah, so that's what I thought also. But apparently, that the Zohar is not learning like that. Meaning, Rebbe wasn't thinking. See, the way I say it, right? It's much more geschmack saying it as. It's not enough. You didn't live here. Now you bring tumah. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you said it like that, then you would say, but if we did live and we had to leave, right? We didn't leave because we wanted to leave. We left because of famine, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's no taina on us for leaving. Right, so then you can't have a problem with us coming back and bringing tumah, but that's not how the Zohar learned. Rebbe learned that Rebbe had two issues here. Mm. Number one, you don't live here. Number two, you're bringing in tumah. Well, number two, bringing in tumah, Yaakov and Yosef are also bringing in tumah. So why did they say to come be brought back? Says the Zohar, the Tiritz, the shiny Yaakov and Yosef. Even according to Rebbe, Yaakov and Yosef were different. Why? Shayu tzadikim gemurim. They were completely righteous. They were a chariot for the divine presence. And guess what? When they died, they did not impart any impurity. The typical impurity that comes from a dead person, that did not come from Yaakov and Yosef, because since they were so righteous, when they died, their bodies were not tummy. And therefore, even according to Rebbe, don't ask me from Yaakov and Yosef. They weren't going to bring tumah because their bodies didn't give off tumah because they were so righteous. But everybody else is not as righteous. They're bringing tumah in. And now that Lezer said, yeah, but they're gaining atonement. Have a good night, everyone.